Varshion made, we will certainly return here. It's more than that, Mikhail. This canyon is an open book of the history of the planet. We should be here, studying what the rocks have to tell us. Ioana and the life sciences people should be down there where the mists hang around all day. That's the best chance for life to be found. Voznesensky had peeled down to his water-tubed skivvies. Jamie was still in his hard-shell pants, leaning against the airlock bulkhead to tug off a boot. The Russian looked at the red dust on Jamie's boots and sniffed loudly. It smells different from the moon. What? After a moonwalk, your shelter smells as if someone had shot off a revolver inside. The lunar dust that clings to your suit and boots has a burnt odor to it. This stuff... He fingered the thin film of rusty powder on the sleeve of his empty hard suit. This Martian dust smells different. Jamie wrinkled his nose. Now that you mention it, it smelled the same way back at the dome, didn't it? Nodding, Voznesensky pulled on his hard suit's arm. It swung upward with a slight hissing sound of its slick Teflon shoulder joints. Smell. Jamie sniffed at the metallic arm. Pungent. Harsh. Then he pulled one of his own gloves from the rack where he had tucked them. Somewhere deep in his memory, the picture of an approaching thunderstorm formed itself. Strange, eerie afternoon light, the summer air heavy and still. Lightning flickering against approaching black clouds. Yeah, strange smell. Almost like... Could it be ozone? Voznesensky rubbed at his eyes. Yes, I think you are right. Ozone. The soil's loaded with superoxide, Jamie said. And in a high temperature inside here, they are breaking down, baking out of the dust. Jamie's own eyes were smarting now. The rover's airlock was much smaller than the cleanup area in the dome. Maybe we ought to get out of the airlock. Not until we clean the suits. Jamie finished pulling off his boots and wriggled out of the hard suit's pants. They vacuumed their suits thoroughly, yet the pungent odor remained in the airlock. Then he followed Voznesensky through the hatch that led into the main compartment of the rover's forward section. Blinking his eyes, Jamie said, Wow, it feels like downtown Houston in there. The ozone will break down quickly enough, said Voznesensky. It becomes molecular oxygen, harmless. Scanning the shelves of equipment neatly stacked on either side of him, Jamie muttered, We have a GCMS in here, don't we? They're not both back in the equipment section. Voznesensky pointed to the lowest shelf. That is the quadrupole device. The magnetic one is in the equipment module. This will do just fine. Jamie knelt down to pull the instrument from the shelf. The gas chromatograph mass spectrometer analyzed the chemical composition of materials, virtually atom by atom. It was neatly packaged in a gray plastic casing, surprisingly light. The manufacturer's logo identified it as Japanese. I want to monitor the levels of ozone in the airlock, see how it decomposes, what else the soil might be outguessing. Good, said Voznesensky. I'll set it up in the airlock and connect it to the secondary display screen in the cockpit. You set up dinner. I'm starving. The Russian's dark brows knitted slightly. You are giving me orders? I am the commander. Jamie was already starting to open the airlock hatch, the spectrometer in one arm resting on his hip. He glanced back over his shoulder at the cosmonaut. I give the orders, Yankee. You set up the GCMS while I prepare our meal. Right, boss, said Jamie, laughing. Ioana watched the display screen as Voznesensky and then Jamie Waterman made their evening reports. She was sitting on a spider-legged stool at the workbench in the biology lab, cocooned in the bulky equipment that surrounded her. She felt almost at home in the laboratory area. The microscopes and isolation boxes and racks of glassware made her feel more comfortable and protected here than in the bare, narrow cubicle that served as her sleeping quarters. She had patched her lab computer into the base's communication system so that she could see the excursion team's report in some privacy. Jamie's face looked serious, yet happy. He was not really smiling, but there was an excitement in his eyes that she had never seen before as he described his day's observations.
This is where we should have landed,
he was saying, looking out from the screen as if he knew his eyes would meet hers.
There's moisture here, and I'm willing to bet that the temperatures down at the bottom of the valley are significantly warmer than up here on the plain.
He went on, his eyes sparkling as he described the rock formations that looked to him so much like the adobe cliff dwellings of southwestern America. "He's a handsome red devil, isn't he?" Joanna whirled on the stool. Tony Reed was standing there, one arm casually leaning on the transparent plastic hood of an empty isolation box. He wore a black turtleneck shirt beneath his tan coveralls. One corner of his lips was curved slightly in a strange, sardonic smile. Joanna stared at him for a wordless moment. It was almost as if Reed's face had been split in two. Half his face was smiling, the other half not. "Jamie makes a strong case for studying the canyon," she said. "The chances for finding living organisms, or even the fossils of extinct species." Reed moved closer to her, pulled up the other stool, and straddled it. Gesturing toward the screen, he said, "Our Indian friend seems to think he's found the ruins of an ancient village. How preposterous." Sudden anger flared within Joanna. "How do you know it is preposterous? How can we say anything about this world until we have explored all of it?" Reed's smile widened. "I'm not a betting man, but I'd be willing to wager long odds that there are no ancient civilizations to be found on Mars." "Yes, and a century and a half ago you would have bet that Schliemann would never find the ruins of Troy." "My, aren't we fiery," Reed laughed. Joanna turned back to the computer, but Vosnesensky's heavy-featured, morose face filled the screen now. She clicked it off. "You're right, of course," Reed admitted easily. "One mustn't jump to conclusions, either way." Joanna accepted it as an apology. "Jamie's doing good work, isn't he?" Reed asked rhetorically. "I'm glad we fought to get him onto the team." "He is a great asset," Joanna agreed. "Much better than Hoffman would have been, although I wonder how DiNardo would have fared here." "What do you mean?" Leaning both his elbows on the lab bench behind him, Reed appeared as relaxed as if he were in a London pub. "Well, DiNardo has this enormous reputation, you know. If he had seen what Jamie's seen out there at the Grand Canyon, I wonder if his prestige would have been big enough to get us to move the camp there." "The entire base?" Reed cocked his head slightly, sending a boyish lock of sandy hair over his forehead. "If Jamie's right, and the canyon is the best place to look for life, then we should at least set up a secondary camp there, don't you think?" Nodding slowly, Joanna said, "But we can't pick up this entire dome and move it." "With that silly Japanese getting himself killed," Reed answered, "the mission controllers probably won't allow us to do anything that's even a millimeter off our official schedule." "But the schedule was meant to be flexible. They cannot hold us to a preset routine as if we were puppets." "You think not? I can't help supposing, though, that if DiNardo were here, we'd already be working out a plan to set up a camp on the floor of the canyon." "That is what Jamie wants to do, is it not?" "Rather. But he's in trouble with his own politicos back in the States, you know, over this Navajo nonsense he said when he landed. I doubt that his recommendation would be accepted by the powers that be." Joanna studied the English physician's face. He was no longer grinning. He seemed completely serious. "I can speak to my father about it," she said. "I am sure he already knows about the possibility, or he will, as soon as today's data reaches mission control."
"Yes?
Surely your father would be helpful. I was thinking more of DiNardo, though. If we can get his agreement that we should set up a secondary camp in the canyon, that would help enormously, I should think." Joanna felt a thrill of excitement run through her.
"Yes, of course. They could not fail to agree with Father DiNardo."
"Hardly," said Reed.
"I will contact him myself," Joanna said, "and suggest to my father that he enlist Father DiNardo's aid as well."
"Yes, that's the ticket.
I will send a message now, this evening, right away."
"Good show," said Reed. He straightened up and got off the stool. Leaning closer to Joanna, he whispered,
"We can accomplish a great deal, you and I, working behind the scenes."
"Oh, yes. Thank you. I am grateful for your help."
"Think nothing of it, dear lady." But as he strolled casually away from the biology lab, back toward his own cubicle, Reed thought, "She's hot for Jamie, that's for certain. Now the game is to work things out so that he remains out there in the Grand Canyon and she stays here."
1,000 kilometers or so between them ought to give me enough working room.